Hey everyone, it's Jordan here.
And I'm Maya.
And today we'll be discussing why the Menendez brothers feared their parents.
Yeah, we'll be talking about the psychological and emotional abuse and the, sort of the family system that created fear in Lyle and Eric. This is part one of a two-part series on psychological maltreatment. In this episode, we'll be covering Kitty's abuse, and in the second episode, we'll cover Jose's abuse and the general family system. Trigger warning for this episode, we'll be discussing psychological and emotional abuse, verbal abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and animal abuse.
Okay, since we're discussing, like, why the Menendez brothers feared their parents, we have to talk about something called psychological maltreatment. This sort of encompasses psychological and emotional abuse, which can also come about through physical abuse, verbal abuse, sexual abuse as well. Do you remember what the categories were for psychological maltreatment? Because I think it might be interesting to go over that quickly.
Yeah, so there's rejecting / degrading, terrorizing, isolating, exploiting / corrupting, denying emotional needs, and denying mental, educational, or medical needs.
Yeah. And all of these aspects of psychological maltreatment were identified at basically every single stage of the brothers' lives up until their parents were killed. And this plays heavily into why the brothers would have developed a fear of their parents.
And with respect to Eric Menendez, did you find psychological maltreatment by both parents in every category listed on that chart?
Yes, I did.
Now, in formulating that opinion, was it necessary for you to evaluate this family system?
Yes, it was.
And in doing that, did you look at the different roles that each member of this four-person system played within the family?
Yes, I did.
And in evaluating that, did you look to see who had the power in this family?
I did. I evaluated that.
And what was your evaluation on that issue?
Well, the parents both had the power. And while it would seem to the outside world that the father, Jose, was the most powerful, in fact, on examination, the mother was a very powerful figure in her own right. As a matter of fact, I would say that she had perhaps more power in some sense than Jose, in that she was with the children the most within in the home setting, particularly in the early years. And so she had her own power as the mother, and then she also had power using Jose, who was not present, but the image of Jose as the all-powerful father, as kind of her batterer. She would threaten the children with the father's power. So she had her own, and then she also had her own plus the father's.
But yeah, I thought that was really interesting, because a lot of people would just assume, oh, like, Jose's the primary abuser, like, he has all the power in the family, he's abusive towards Kitty and the kids, he obviously has all the power in the relationship. But I don't think that's exactly true. Before we get into direct examples of that, we should probably go over, like, some of the actual signs that, like, there was psychological maltreatment, especially during, like, the brothers', like, early lives and teenage years.
Some of the signs of abuse that were seen in Lyle and Eric, really starting in childhood and all the way through, were that both of them would dissociate a lot.
I think we've spoken about this before, but dissociating is something that, like, everyone does, but it's when it gets to a point when it's happening so frequently that it's interfering with your daily life and the people around you are noticing, which is what happened in this case. Like, everyone, pretty much everyone, like their teachers and coaches and friends, the people who interacted with them on a daily basis noticed this happening a lot.
The other thing is that both brothers would have bruises or signs of physical abuse. There was a point during Lyle's testimony where I remember his lawyer had him sort of go through where he got all of the scars on his body, and we'll talk about some of those incidents, but and there's also pictures of the brothers with physical injuries.
Say, like, one other sign, like, experts have spoken about this, but it's very common that survivors have stuffed animals, like, past the age where a child would usually, like, stop being interested in, like, kids' toys like that. And in this case, Lyle had stuffed animals up until around the age of 17, right?
Yeah, and, like, not only did he have them, but he would, like, continue to play with them, and he sort of used them to, like, act out issues in his life. I think Dr. Conti described it as play therapy, mm-hmm. where he was using the animals to process the traumatic events in his life.
What other factors did you consider in assessing the believability of the information he gave you? Were there other activities that he described that had some importance to you? Such about as the stuffed animals.
Yes, but that goes to a much larger issue, I think, than just the molestation. Yeah, I think his discussion of the stuffed animals was really quite amazing.
Well, let me stop you here. It goes to a larger issue, and is that his overall credibility in terms of the psychological abuse and the physical abuse and the description of the family setting?
Yes.
And what was the significance of the stuffed animals in that context?
Well, you know, many survivors have stuffed animals. I believe Dr. Briere, I read his testimony about that, and he said that. And that is true. I think many survivors do. Although I've never actually seen that described in the literature. It's something that people who work with survivors tend to know. Maybe in the literature, I just am not aware of it. But what was phenomenal about Lyle's use of the stuffed animals is that he really, first of all, he had large numbers of them, and he gave them personalities, and he acted out scenarios with those stuffed animals, kind of issues in his life. And he had personalities in the animals, or gave personalities, that sort of represented issues in his life. He had, you know, nasty stuffed animals, and he had weaker ones, and he had stronger ones, and he had sort of a judge who made decisions about what was going on among the stuffed animals. And in a sense that I've in a way that I've never heard from another victim, he, in a way, was doing play therapy. When we see traumatized kids, we often ask them to act out with animals, with puppets sometimes, sometimes with a dollhouse, sometimes in sand play, their bad experiences. The difference between Lyle's acting out his issues with his stuffed animals and play therapy is that there was no therapist there to help guide the process. And so there was no therapist there to help talk about the feelings that the stuffed animals had, or to maybe figure out ways that the stuffed animals could work out the scenario in a different way. So his description of how important the animals were and what he did with the animals, you know, he took them when he buried the rabbit, for example, some of them were there. And his collecting other animals that were kind of orphaned by his brother, this is sort of an over-involvement, or it's an excessive use of animals for a therapeutic, to meet a therapeutic need. And he, you know, he told me, for example, one point that his mom had thrown a stuffed animal out and the dogs had got it and ripped it up. And he told me that he had been able to save the hat. They're still important to him in a way, you know, that this was a very significant thing to him. He told me that he took him to high school and it was okay because he was a popular kid. although I read it elsewhere, I think, in the school notes, that he really was kind of teased about it. But they were so important to him because they had this therapeutic coping purpose to him. That description was wholly believable to me, and I don't think a non-victim would have known that therapeutic use. And I talked to Stacey Feldman, his first girlfriend, on my trip to New Jersey, and she described, oh yeah, the animals, and you know, so there's confirmation just about how important these were in his life. So that's one of a number of factors, I think, that I found to be important in sort of assessing his overall credibility.
I can't remember which teacher it was, but I'm pretty sure there was a teacher who said that, like, Lyle would use the stuffed animal to, like, put up his hand in class.
Yeah.
For example, which is very odd for a high schooler.
Yeah. And, I mean, I also think that's the kind of thing that if you were creating a story of abuse, I don't think you would know to do that. That's the kind of thing that, I mean, you know, before this case, I had no idea that that was something that survivors did. Another sign of abuse that Lyle exhibited was that he wet the bed until age 14. We talked about this during our video where we went over his testimony about his sexual abuse, because bedwetting is a specific sign of sexual abuse, but it's also a sign of general psychological abuse, too.
Like, for Eric more specifically, like, there's less stuff about bedwetting and stuffed animals. However, with Eric, it was noted that he had extremely high anxiety, really low self-esteem. He just genuinely had, like, a fearful personality. And he would cry very frequently. And a good example of this would be, like, whenever he got a bad grade at school or got something wrong, like, he would just burst into tears. And this happened so frequently that, according to his teachers, like, his classmates were so used to it that they would, like, just gather around him and, like, support him or try to, because they were so used to seeing it. It's a sign of abuse, but it's also just a sign that this person is not well-adjusted at all.
Teachers and coaches and family members saw both the signs of abuse, but they also witnessed abusive incidents, which were sort of a little glimpse into what it was like behind closed doors.
Now we can actually discuss, I guess it would be incidents of psychological maltreatment and abuse.
So we talked a bit about, like, the five categories of psychological maltreatment. One of them is rejecting. And I think Kitty's relationship with both of her children, but especially Lyle, just encapsulates rejection.
Yeah, rejection and neglect.
She would say that I ruined her life. And she would explain to me why and how I ruined her life.
What would she tell you about why and how you ruined her life?
Well, if she wasn't in a tantrum and she was just speaking normally, she would just explain all the things that she could have been, an actress, broadcasting. I learned about her aspirations with disappointments with not being a child actress and wanting to go on in some acting or broadcasting sense. And she told me that she had a job in New York to be a hostess at a restaurant, that she said she could make almost $50,000 a year, and that then suddenly she had gotten pregnant, that she had not wanted to get pregnant, that my dad had then forced her, well, gave her an ultimatum, either you leave or you stay home with my son and quit. And so she chose to stay home, and essentially her life was pretty much ruined from that point on. But then we would have more discussions about how much money was being spent on my tennis, all my dad's time on my tennis, who cares, and And then I would hear about the lessons she couldn't have, the things that she couldn't have. And then there would be other times when she was in a tantrum. Then it would just come out very, you know, in a rage.
What would come out in a rage?
She would be throwing things and screaming and flailing and wanting and trying to hit you and saying that you're a bastard. And she cursed a lot. And then wait till your dad gets home, I'll tell him the things that you didn't do today. And I wish you were never born. And why can't you be like your brother? And what's the matter with you? And then I would try to say something. She would say, shut up. I don't want to hear it. You're stupid. I hate you.
How old were you when you heard things like, I wish you were never born?
Seven.
I mean, she would basically blame him for all the problems in her life, like her, all the misery in her life, the fact that she could have had a career, she could have done all these things, and the fact that she had Lyle is what ruined all of that for her. To be outright saying this to your child is abusive. And there's the whole, like, telling him she wished he was never born, which is also something which was corroborated by Jose's sister, Marta Cano.
And moving ahead for a moment to 1986, when they were living in the Princeton house, the one on Mountain Avenue, mm-hmm. did you go over there one morning and meet with Kitty?
Yes.
And on that particular occasion, did you see Lyle and one of his girlfriends?
Yes.
And was there a conversation on that occasion in front of Lyle when Kitty told you something about how she felt about her children?
Yes.
And what was it she said she felt about her children?
She told me she wished they would have never been born because they had broken her marriage.
And did she give you any other reasons why she wished they had never been born? In other words, we said broken their marriage. Did she say anything else about how they had broken her marriage?
She told me they had made her life miserable and separated her from Jose.
Did she say anything to you in that conversation about Jose's obsession with or focus on the children? Did she say
yes.
anything about his calling, for example?
Yes.
What did she say in that regard in that conversation?
She said, my husband only cares for the boys.
And did she give an example of that? Did she say
yes.
anything about when he calls, for example?
Yes.
What did she say about that?
She said that she...
Overall.
She was tired of getting orders from Jose what to do here and what to do there for the boys, that he never asked her how she was or how she felt.
That his telephone calls were totally
concerning for the boys. Them. Yes, concerning the boys.
Did Lyle say anything when his mother said these words in front of him?
Yes, he did.
What did he say?
He was very unrespectful.
After he heard her say that?
Yes.
So it seemed to upset him?
Yes.
But that's like an example of that happening later on in life. But it's something that she repeated for many, many years. I mean, along those same lines as well, I can't remember if Diane testified to it, but she says it in Eric Tells All, where Kitty had told Diane that, like, children only serve, like, as a wedge between a husband and wife.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same line of thinking. Like, she only views Lyle as, like, an obstacle.
So we talked a bit about this in our video about Jose and Kitty's relationship, but Kitty never wanted to have children, and Jose had given her an ultimatum when she got pregnant, where he told her to either leave him or stay at home and take care of the children. So this sort of fostered a resentment in Kitty towards both children, but especially Lyle.
Yeah. Kitty also, I think when Lyle must have been like only a few months old, she wanted to leave Lyle with her in-law, Jose's mother, Maria, while she and Jose basically went on vacation skiing, where like they would go up to the ski resort and like they would come back down and like visit on the weekends, I think, when the child was only a few months old. So that's already like rejecting and abandoning.
She also would blame things on the brothers so that she could escape being physically abused by Jose or being punished by him. And this kind of goes back to the, like, Kitty not being the typical battered wife, is that she would throw her children under the bus
rather than trying to protect them from Jose's abuse. Like, she used them so that she herself wasn't abused.
Well, Mr. Menendez, did you have an opportunity when you were quite young to observe the relationship between your brother and your mother?
Yes.
Was it somewhat different than your relationship with your mother?
Yes.
What was it like?
She disliked him. She hated him. There was a lot of tension, and she didn't care about him.
Now, what was it that you saw or heard that led you to conclude that your mother hated your brother?
Just what she would say to him. She would say similar things to me, but just so often to Lyle. All the time, she would blame him for things that he didn't do to Dad because she didn't want to get in trouble. She would, well, she did that to me too, but she just the way she treated Lyle, I knew that she didn't like Lyle.
On an average day, Mr. Menendez, would your mother drive you and your brother to school?
Yes.
And on an average day, did she appear in the mornings to be angry with Lyle?
Yes.
What would happen, if you can recall, if, for example, she couldn't find her purse, or she couldn't find her keys, or she couldn't find something?
She'd blame Lyle.
And to the best of your knowledge, did he have anything to do with her purse or her keys or anything like that?
No. Whenever she couldn't find anything or really was late or this, Lyle was there, she'd always blame Lyle. She'd always say, it's your fault, you're making me busy, you make me too frustrated, I don't have time with you around.
Now, what was different with you and your mother?
She, when I was younger, seemed to care a lot more about me than Lyle. In fact, she told me that that I was a better kid than Lyle. She would compare me to Lyle. Like, I did a lot of things for her. I liked doing things for her. I would vacuum the floor, I would do the dishes, and she would say these things to me because I knew she would when I did that. And she just seemed to care more about me than Lyle.
Now, you said she said things like you were a better son than Lyle?
Yes.
What other complimentary things did your mother say to you over the course of your life, Mr. Menendez?
Just basically comparing me to Lyle.
So she favorably compared you to Lyle?
Yes.
On this note as well, like, there is no evidence or record at all of Kitty showing any sort of love or nurturing towards her children.
I mean, I think we talked a bit about sort of why this might have been true, like with Kitty's family history of coming from an abusive home where she had to sort of take care of her mother. But again, like we said in our last video, that does not excuse her lack of affection towards her children at all. I don't know, do you have any other thoughts of like maybe why Kitty behave this way?
I think it's a reflection not only of the consequences of how she was raised, and the situations that she was probably forced into as a child and having to, in being forced to take a sort of the caring role over her mother. But I think it's also a reflection of her basic personality structure. Like, I think she was a narcissist. And, like, to her, like, her children were just obstacles that got in the way of the only thing that she cared about, which was Jose's attention.
Yeah. And I think that's especially why she was so rejecting of Lyle, because Jose put a lot of attention on Lyle, and I think Kitty was jealous of that, and that's why she was so rejecting of him.
So something that I alluded to before was the fact that, like, psychological maltreatment is kind of the core of all abuse in a way. And so it goes that Kitty's sexual abuse of Lyle would also add to his psychological maltreatment.
Would she sometimes show you pictures of herself when she was younger?
Yes.
Remember her showing you that picture?
Yes.
And what's it appear to be?
A bathing suit photo in her house.
And 241?
Yes.
And what does that appear to be?
Looks like either a bathing suit or lingerie picture in her house.
Did your mother's looks, how she appeared to other people, seem to be important to her?
She didn't take very good care of herself, but it seemed to be important to her.
Would she ask you how she looked?
Yes.
And sometimes when she asked you how she looked, would she be inappropriately attired?
She would be topless. Usually just topless or like an open robe. And sometimes, you know, with her clothes on.
And what ages are you talking about where she would expose herself to you this way?
I was about 11.
She help you with your baths?
Yes.
How would she help you with your baths?
She would come in after I'd been in there a while. She would help wash my hair and wash me with a sponge.
How old are you talking about?
Same, 11. 11 to 13.
And when you say she would wash you with the sponge, would she just wash your back, or?
No. She would wash me everywhere.
She would wash your genitals?
Yes.
You slept in bed with your mom a lot, didn't you, even when you were little?
Yes.
And did you continue to sleep in her bed around this time when you're 11 and 12?
Sometimes.
And sometimes, did you touch your mom?
Yes.
Would your dad be in bed?
Sometimes.
And where would you touch her?
Everywhere.
Did she touch your back?
She kissed me, but she didn't touch me.
And how long did these things go on for?
Until I was 13, a little bit farther than that.
And when this was going on with your mom, was she nicer to you than she used to be?
No. She was worse.
And did it stop at some point?
It stopped a few months after I was 13.
Who stopped it?
I did.
How did she react to that?
She was furious and, you know, she couldn't be too much worse, but she harassed me and we just sort of had arguments about and problems about that for a long time, a couple of years.
Was your
really for my whole life, because it came out in other ways too.
And after all of this stopped with your mother, did she show you specifically that she was unhappy that it had stopped, or she was angry about it?
She harassed me.
What do you mean she harassed you?
She just kept exposing herself, picking me up at the clubs with, you know, in a robe, exposed, leaving her underwear around, calling me into the room when she knew that she was, you know, changing, asking me if she looked pretty, and call me a liar when I said yes. Sometimes she would be in a tantrum, and then she would come over and she would touch my face real gentle, like she was going to kiss me, and then she would go back into her rage. And she was very upset.
I've heard a lot of people who look into this case, and I think it was in one of the more recent documentaries that someone, I'm pretty sure it was Brian Anderson, said, like, I could never believe that my sister would do something like that. And I remember they sort of played off Lyle's testimony about this as him just trying to make Kitty look equally as bad as Jose, that, like, oh, they both sexually abused their children, like, they both deserve to die kind of thing. But I feel like if this was a lie and that was the motivation behind it, then the way that Lyle described it would not really serve that purpose.
Yeah. I mean, he's incredibly vague during his testimony about it. Like, it doesn't really make... If it was for the purpose of, oh, okay, I'm just going to throw this in to make my mother seem just as bad as my father, why... Like, why is he so vague about it, and why... Because, like, to me, watching it, like, it seems like he has, like, such an adverse reaction to it. Like, he doesn't want to elaborate. I think you do see, like, Jill tries to press him for more, but he just doesn't reveal anything else. I feel like a good example of this is that he specifically refers to the sexual abuse by his mother as being mutual.
You've indicated in your direct examination that you were sexually abused by your father and your mother. Is that correct?
I don't think so. I didn't use those words.
Well, but isn't that the gist of what you were saying? That you were the victim of sexual abuse?
With my father and with my mother, I just said what happened, and I think it was mutual.
All right, but it was some sort of sexual misconduct which happened to you when you were a minor. Is that correct?
That'd be correct, I think.
And you know what a minor is? It's someone under the age of 18?
Right.
Okay. And he doesn't really expand upon that, but it's also the sort of thing where it's like, okay, well, if he wants to paint his mother as complicit, why is he in the same vein kind of removing that and saying, well, actually, it was me, I was the one, like, I joined in, I was an active participant, it was mutual. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he really wanted to paint his mother as, like, an aggressor and, like, in that bad of a light, as, like, as bad as his father, I feel like he could have said way worse things if that's what his goal was, you know?
Yeah.
I'd say, like, the actual direct corroboration for this, though, is, and I think Dr. Conti spoke about this, was him basically assaulting his cousin Diane.
Yeah, we talked about this in our video that we did on Lyle's sexual abuse by Jose, but I actually think it's more corroborative of Lyle's sexual abuse by Kitty, because I think what Dr. Conti said in his testimony was, like, Lyle was at an age where there would be no way for him to know certain things about the way that he assaulted Diane.
And he seemed to know what he was doing, right?
Yeah, Diane said that.
There are different theories as to why Kitty would have sexually abused Lyle. But, like, Maya, you have your own thoughts about that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think sort of what we were talking about before, and, like, part of why I thought we should include this in this episode was that I think Kitty's sexual abuse of Lyle is just a reflection of her rejection of him. Her motivation behind it was the same as her motivation behind her rejection of him, which is that she was jealous of Jose and Lyle's relationship, and that Jose was focusing all of his attention on Lyle and not paying enough attention to her. And so I think she decided to, in a sense, like, replace Jose's role in her life with Lyle, like, at least from a sexual standpoint, which is really disgusting.
And dysfunctional.
Yeah. Because thinking about, like, the way that she groomed him was by showing him pictures of herself and asking him if she looked pretty. So, like, to me, that's her seeking out the attention that she wasn't getting from Jose. Like, I don't think Kitty was a pedophile in the same way that Jose was, that she, like, was sexually attracted to children, but I think that her sexual abuse of Lyle was more a product of her own problems and isolation, that she would seek out sexual attention from her son.
Yeah, I always saw it as sort of like you said, like, her like rejection of Lyle came from her being jealous of the attention that Lyle received from Jose. Sort of in that same vein, I can sort of see it as, like, Kitty trying to reclaim some of that, like, lost attention, and seeing as Lyle was who was being used by Jose and who all the attention was going on, I think her sexually abusing Lyle was kind of reclaiming some of that, in a sense. I think it could be interpreted in that way as well.
Yeah. So we've been talking about how she was completely rejecting of Lyle in, like, all other aspects of their relationship. And so I think when Kitty started to show him these pictures and ask him how she looked and things like that, Lyle interpreted that to be her showing him affection. And, like, that was the only time in his life that she showed him what he interpreted to be love. Because in all other aspects of his life, she was horrible to him.
Your relationship with your mother was never good before that, is that correct?
No.
Was it worse after that?
Oh, yeah, she was just... she was pretty much... zeroed in on me after that. Very, I don't know, she felt rejected
I don't know what she felt
exactly, but it was a constant attacking.
Were you angry with her also?
Was I angry? I was very angry. I thought that it was unfair.
Why was it unfair?
Because we were doing this and she was enjoying it. And I was hoping that things were going to get better for our whole relationship and things might get better. And she got worse.
Did you think she was going to love you if you did these things?
I took it to be love. And that's what I wanted.
I mean, I just think that's like such a psychologically damaging thing to do to your child.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I found really interesting from Lyle's testimony about his sexual abuse by Kitty was that he said that Jose would be in the bed sometimes. What do you make of that?
I don't know. It is interesting because it's something that he very briefly mentions. I think it does suggest that there was more to the situations in which Lyle was sexually abused by Kitty, because it's odd that he would mention that. But it seems like he just didn't want to be pressed on it very much. I don't know, it's interesting. Like, how do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there was more to his sexual abuse by Kitty, like, partially because of that comment. Because that was a question that his attorney asked him. So, like, that was obviously something that they had discussed before. It was interesting that she didn't press him on it, maybe because she could tell that, or she knew that this was something that he was really uncomfortable discussing. It does make me wonder if they may have abused him together, but yeah. That's pretty speculative.
I mean, I think something that does sort of tie in with this a little bit is how, like, the experts and Dr. Conti specifically said that, like, in his watching of Lyle's testimony, he saw that Lyle was still trying to protect his parents' image in a way. To me, that was basically like the expert saying, like, yeah, he told us a lot more that he's not saying publicly because he doesn't want to completely ruin the image of his parents.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder, considering how much their image was ruined by what he did say, like, what else was going on. One other thing that makes me think that there was more to Kitty's sexual abuse of Lyle than he talked about on the stand is that when the brothers revealed to their family members that they had killed their parents, they also told them that Jose had been molesting Eric, and Lyle said that Kitty had molested him. But in his testimony, he didn't say that she had molested him. And like we talked about, he described it as being mutual. So to me, that suggests that it was less mutual than he described, or there were more elements of it that were her seeking it out from him, or that there were more things that went on that he viewed as abusive, if that makes sense.
Yeah, do you think that's another aspect of him trying to protect his parents' image? Like, in him saying that his mother's abuse was mutual, it was him trying to sort of soften it?
Yeah, I think so. If he was saying all of these things to try to portray his parents as these monstrous people, and specifically Kitty as being a monster along with Jose, then why would he soften it?
Yeah, on that same note, though, I do think, especially when it came to the sexual abuse, like, Lyle did not really say much in comparison to Eric, whereas Eric sort of just went out there and was like, oh yeah, this is a whole bunch of the stuff that happened to me. With Lyle, it felt more like he just wanted to get it out and done with. It definitely seemed to me, at least, that he really did not want to speak about it. And I mean, because there's information about how Lyle had refused to testify for, like, years before the trial had started. And Eric had basically kept trying to say to him, like, we have to be honest, we have to say what happened. But Lyle just kept refusing. And I think you can see that in their testimony. Like, it's reflected in their testimony, I think. I guess Kitty's other, would this be, like, terrorizing behavior? So Kitty's, like, disregard for her children's safety in general, right? That's terrorizing.
Yeah.
So, apparently Kitty was, a completely reckless driver. She would drive around at high speeds with her children, like, not even strapped in with, like, a seatbelt or anything. Which is, yeah, that's definitely terrorizing behavior.
Yeah, didn't Alan Anderson talk about a time when they, like, almost ran off the road?
Yeah. Or, like, Kitty said, let's go for a joyride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Diane said that, like, they went across, like, they drove through, like, an entire state at, like, some really high speed. So, yeah, Kitty was known as a very reckless driver, which is endangering and terrorizing.
She would also, like, abandon them in malls when she went shopping, where I guess she would, like, lose them and not go try to find them until after she was done shopping, where the brothers would have to go to the mall security and wait for her.
And even if she was, like, paged and said, hey, like, your sons are here, like, she still didn't care. Faith Goldsmith was out with them when I think Eric had, like, fallen over and really injured himself, and, like, Kitty didn't really seem to care.
Yeah, didn't she say that Kitty finished buying her shoes before she took Eric to the hospital?
Yeah. And, I mean, it's a pretty terrorizing thing to do to a child, like, especially at that age, to be lost. You have no idea really where you are. You don't know where your caregiver is. And then on top of that, to know that she's been paged and she knows where you are, but she doesn't care. And she won't come and find you. That's an incredibly damaging and terrorizing thing to do to a child.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think it demonstrates Kitty's disregard for her children's safety.
Mm-hmm.
That she would do really reckless, drive really recklessly and abandon them in malls and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, we spoke about it previously, but on the same topic of Kitty's disregard for her children's safety, just her general not interfering when Jose was violent to the brothers or abusive to the brothers. She would never step in to protect them, ever.
I mean, I think that kind of goes along with, like, how the brothers felt, you know, in that last week when they felt that they were going to be killed, that Kitty was, you know, she had always rejected them. She had never expressed to them that she cared about them at all. And she had never stepped in to help them when Jose was doing something violent to them before.
So why would she step in that last week and do anything to help them whatsoever? Especially when they're threatening to out her as basically a child molester.
Yeah.
So something that was testified to by numerous people in the trial was Kitty's unstable temperament and how she would fly into rages quite frequently, and she had a very particular, like, look when she went into these rages. This was demonstrated by, I think, Alan Anderson and Diane Vandermolen during their testimony.
What about Kitty? Did she have a temper?
Oh, immensely. She, don't tell.
And did you have opportunities to observe her get mad?
Oh, yes. She had this...
Wait a second. How often did that happen? Would it be once a day, once a week, once a month, once a year?
Once a week for sure.
Okay. Now, was there anything unusual about her behavior when she got mad?
If I may, I could show you her parents that let me know she was about to fly off the handle, is that she would...
Can you stand up and demonstrate?
She would be standing in an area, spacing on an area, and thinking about what, and all of a sudden she would just turn her fist up and...
So you'd clench
and she would squint. Her teeth, her lips would go straight. She had perfect teeth, so you can see her teeth would just come out. The veins in her neck would pop, and her fist would be, and then clenched, where her knuckles would be white from clenching her fists. And at first, I didn't know what to accept of that. And then as I lived there, I realized what that was, what that appearance of her was about to happen with, what was about to happen.
What was about to happen?
On numerous occasions, and this happened every week, she would, in the kitchen, would open a cupboard and start taking coffee cups, coffee saucers, breakfast bowls, these are glass items, and repeatedly throwing them in the sink and breaking glass in the sink. And at the end of that, then I would walk in, because I'd be in the other room around the corner watching TV or in the area, general area, it would get my attention immediately. I would run in the kitchen and go, "Kitty," which would snap her out of whatever she was into. There were times that also she would not snap out of it. She would just repeatedly keep doing this until either she was satisfied or that row of wherever she was emptied.
And when this happened, was this, how did it make you feel? Was it a frightening experience?
It was very frightening. Also, it made me very concerned. I just didn't know what to make of it. I tried to ask her what was the problem. She would not talk to me. She would just right away direct my attention to getting the broom and a dustpan and the vacuum cleaner so the mess was cleaned up before Jose got home.
And what was the reaction of the boys to this behavior?
Normal. This seemed very normal, which they didn't get extremely excited, like I did, which I found to be very strange in my own way.
And would there be times when she would get angry at, rather than throwing the dishes, when she would get angry and express her anger directly to you or to either of the boys?
She would do that fist-clenching, face-tensening thing, which whenever that would happen, I would jokingly look at Lyle and say, "Oh, man, here we go. Something's going to happen now." Or, "What did you do?" Or, "What, you know, I'm trying to think, what did I do?" And then she would just fill us verbally with what her problem was with us as far as raising her voice and yelling at us.
And how long would it go on?
Until she had to say what she had to say, which could be enough, anywhere from a minute to sometimes 5-10 minutes.
Like, even to them, they were older at the time, but even to them, it was terrifying. So they could only imagine, like, how terrifying it probably would have been for both Eric and Lyle as children. She was known to throw things on occasion. She would open up, like, cupboards and, like, break dishes and throw glass. And the brothers testified that she would often beat them with her bare hands or drag them by the hair, for example.
Yeah, she could get quite violent during her rages. I think that's another element of this case that often gets left out of the media portrayal of the abuse, is that Kitty could be violent and was unstable and aggressive towards her children too.
Yeah, I mean, hold on, there's something I want to get up quickly that's part of her therapist's notes, Dr. Summerfield, that I think is pretty important in this regard. Kitty had told Summerfield that she took out her anger and frustrations on her sons when they were growing up. So, I mean, I think you can infer from that, that's sort of Kitty talking about how she was abusive to her children. Summerfield also administered the MMPI test twice to Kitty and found that she was suffering from depression, mood swings, angry outbursts, extremely concerned with appearances. She had a low tolerance for frustration, would get aggressive when frustrated, and suffered with chemical dependency, which included prescription drugs and alcohol. So I think this all sort of ties in with her rages and her mental instability.
Yeah, her dependence on drugs and alcohol was something that the brothers saw pretty frequently. But I think, yeah, she, like we've talked about a lot, she was a very complicated person. I think there's a lot of like nuance behind her behavior. I think a lot of it comes from the fact that she was in an unhealthy marriage. She had, you know, trauma from her past. Not trying to make excuses for her behavior, but I think her abusive behavior was rooted in a lot of her own issues.
It's just a shame that she didn't get help for her issues.
So, we had mentioned Lyle's stuffed animal collection and how they were super important to him, but sometimes Kitty would act violently towards Lyle's stuffed animals if she was in one of these rages. So I think he talked about her throwing them outside and like the dogs going and tearing them up, stuff like that.
I think it's another example of her, I think it's abusive towards Lyle because she knows how important they are to him, and I think she knows it's a way that she can hurt him.
Yeah.
Do you think this sort of ties in with Lyle's testimony that she had, like, smeared blood on his face?
Was there a time where you upset your mother as she was preparing dinner and she cut herself?
Yes.
How old were you?
11.
What happened after she cut herself?
It was by the glass door, and I think I said her name. And she was doing something in the kitchen, and she cut her hand. And she ran over, and she pushed me against the glass, and she rubbed her hand in my face. And said, see what you did to me.
Did she get blood on you?
Oh, yeah. Her hand was a mess, and my face was a mess. And I ate dinner that way.
Why did you eat dinner that way? Why didn't you wash it off?
I went to wash it off. She said, no, just leave it. Just eat. And I thought I was going to have to go to school like that, but by the end of the evening, she let me wash it off.
Was your dad home?
No, these things wouldn't happen if my dad was home.
I think that it does tie in with her, like, unstable nature and her, like, also her sort of fixation on him.
There was also an incident where I believe Kitty had gone out with Lyle somewhere, and while they were out, Eric had decided to try and bake a cake for Kitty. I mean, he was pretty young at the time, so he probably didn't really know what he was doing, and he ended up making quite a mess.
And I did something wrong in making the cake. I either turned up the temperature too much or put in the wrong ingredient or something, and the cake sort of went all over the oven. It spilled out and did a lot of things.
Okay, and what happened?
And I noticed this right before she got home with Lyle, and she came in the house, and I was trying to clean up the mess that I had made in the oven, and she saw it, and she got extremely upset.
Okay, and after she got extremely upset, what, if anything, did she do?
She saw what I did, and she started screaming, and she grabbed part of the cake and started throwing it at me, and I ran up to my room, and she chased me up there.
Was your mother ever physical with you. Did she ever hit you or slap you or hurt you?
Yes.
And what were some of the things she would hit you for?
I guess when I made her very angry.
Okay.
These type of things, things that I screwed up on, if I didn't vacuum the floor right, she wouldn't come over and hit me in the face. She would just pound on my chest or slap me if I wasn't doing my homework right, or not my homework, my testing. That's when she would get really angry for that as well. Just different things like that.
Okay, another incident with Kitty being violent towards them would be the teaching sessions with Eric, right? At least I would see that as being psychological maltreatment, at least.
Yeah, definitely.
He'd be writing, and she would just be watching like this. And as soon as he made a mistake, she'd take the paper and she'd go, God, do it again! Do it again! And then my brother would just be like this, and he would go over and write again. She would wait like about 10 seconds, and she'd grab the thing again, and she'd just crumple it up, and she'd slam it down again, and then she'd just start hitting. And just on the back of the head and his back, and he was supposed to keep writing. And I remember one time my dad walked in, and I don't think he had any idea sometimes that these things were going on in the house, because he was in shock. And he just was in shock. And my brother looked at him and he was crying. And I told him later that you got to do something for my mom. Because she was out of control.
What'd your dad say?
He said to just avoid her, and that she was not a rational person. Just avoid her. And that's what I did.
I mean, I think it speaks to, like, how, because both parents were so abusive and unpredictable, there was, like, an element of it where neither parent really regulated each other's behavior.
Mm-hmm. I'd say, like, another part of the psychological maltreatment to do with Kitty's behavior, specifically towards Eric here, is that she would just sometimes, if he had to do work, she would throw him in her closet and basically just have him stay there the entire day or for hours on end. And he wouldn't be allowed to leave. I think all he had in there was basically like Tupperware container where he would relieve himself, and that was it. Which, it's just sad, but also it's confusing because, like, Kitty was a teacher herself, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of confusing that someone who had been a teacher earlier on in her life would think that this is appropriate. Actually, on this same sort of train of thought, didn't she also throw Lyle, like, underneath the bed?
Yeah, well, that was, like, for punishment. I think both brothers would go under the bed. Because I remember in Eric Tells All, Alan Anderson talks about how he saw this. He was one of the cousins that lived in the house, and he, like, found a Tupperware container under the bed that had, like, human feces in it. One thing that I think is important about her rages and this element of her abuse is that, like, she was always very unstable and, like, viewed by her children as being very unpredictable in her behavior, which I think kind of speaks to the events of that last week where they viewed her as being more in control and that she wasn't unstable and she wasn't doing things to them that they perceived as her losing control. Like, didn't Eric describe that she had, like, a resolved look on her face at one point?
Yeah. It was just before the shooting when he was heading up the stairs.
Yeah.
We've spoken about this before in previous videos, but there was a time when Jose's affairs came out, and that Kitty found out about them just after they moved to California, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And she ended up writing a suicide note, which she had left on purpose for Eric to find, after the brothers found out about the suicide note. Lyle basically went to his mother with an offer and said, come on, like, let's move back to New Jersey. Like, just leave Dad. He's making your life miserable. We'll support you in a divorce. Like, we're concerned about you. And when Lyle does this, she immediately rejects the idea and then just continues to blame him for all of her problems, basically suggesting that, like, you're the cause of my problems, your father's fine, you're the reason why I'm unhappy. Which sort of compounds on what she had told him all of those previous years, which is that she wished he had never been born, he was the reason why she didn't have a career, all of those sorts of things.
Yeah. Do you remember that letter that Lyle read out that he had written to her?
Mm-hmm.
And would you read for us just the first few lines? The first six lines.
Hi, Mom. How are you? I hope you're all right and hanging in there. I often worry about you. You're the only mother I have and would want. Made any new friends? Done anything interesting? I hope so. I'm all right over here. Cole and I traveled.
And then it goes on and you talk about your trip. Is that correct?
Right.
And would you get the last paragraph?
I hope everything's all right at home with Dad and Eric. I miss you all. I miss you all. I will write very soon again, so check the mailbox. Love you, Mom, Lyle.
When you wrote that letter to her, were those true feelings?
Yes.
Do you love your mom?
Yes.
Were you worried about her?
Yes.
Did you continue to try to reach out to her during this period of time?
I tried a few times and tried to let her know that we loved her, but she never acknowledged that.
Yeah, I have it on my Instagram account actually as well. I think I made a post about it. So what I said in the post was, I think the letter also shows a side of Lyle that often goes ignored. It's demonstrative of the love that he had for his mother, and that even after all of those years of rejection, he was still desperate to have his mother love and acknowledge him. He was also willing to throw away the close relationship he had with Jose solely for his mother's sake. This may also be a mute point, but with someone who clearly loves and cares about their parent, as shown in this letter, then coldly plan out their brutal murder a couple years later, simply because he wanted their money. It's my personal opinion that it's not psychologically consistent at all.
I mean, that pretty much sums it up. I think that letter really disproves, or is very contrary to, the hatred theory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you wanted to say, okay, yes, they were abused, but they still planned this out. They just hated their parents. It was for revenge. Why would he be saying, like, that he loves her in these letters and that he cares about her, that he wants her to be okay, if he was building up a hatred towards her that would end up causing him to murder her?
Yeah. That's how I see it as well. Like, I don't think it's psychologically consistent.
You know, you would think that they would be building up a hatred towards their parents for the abuse, but at least for Kitty, that wasn't really true. At least up until she revealed that she had known the whole time that Jose was molesting Eric.
And I think it makes sense that that revelation is what would have caused Lyle to become as angry as he probably was, which would override his wanting to help his mother.
Yeah, that's how I see it, too. I think that, like, this whole time is, like, really significant in terms of, like, the brothers' perspectives on their parents. Because, you know, like, obviously they saw throughout their life that Kitty was so devoted to Jose and, like, didn't really care about them. And then seeing that she was so unwilling to leave him even after he had cheated on her for 8 years. Like, if she wasn't willing to leave his side over that, then why would she be willing to leave his side over what he was doing to them when she never cared about them?
So one other area of psychological maltreatment in this case is that both brothers alleged that their mother had threatened to poison them. I believe this happened on numerous occasions, right?
Yeah, so this was around the time that Kitty had discovered Jose's affair, the 8-year affair, and she was threatening to kill herself on a pretty regular basis, and she would threaten to take the entire family down with her by poisoning the family.
I mean, it reminds me of what Pam Bozanich had said to Dr. Ann Tyler in her cross-examination, where she suggested that, like, Kitty's suicidality, like, could be a cry for help. I mean, I know the experts didn't classify it as a cry for help, but more as, like, an attack on her children, right? And that's why it would be psychological maltreatment.
Yeah, I mean, threatening to kill everyone in your family because of your own problems, I mean, that's pretty terrorizing.
Yeah.
In the first trial, a former girlfriend of Lyle's testified that she was present at a dinner where Kitty had served the family food, and then Jose said something like, "I don't trust you today. I don't trust your cooking today. We're all going out to eat." And they left the table and left Kitty behind and went and ate out at a restaurant. But before the second trial, a letter was discovered where Lyle had directed this ex-girlfriend, whose name is Tracy Baker, how to testify about that story.
I'd say it's kind of clear from the letter that she wasn't necessarily there. Tracy also testified to another incident that happened between her and Kitty, which we don't have to talk about it here. We can talk about it another time, but her demeanor just completely changes. When she's talking about the dinner that she had where she apparently witnessed this, but is also the conversation where Lyle is, like, trying to direct her testimony, when she's talking about that, she speaks incredibly fast. She's, like, almost not hyperventilating, but, like, you can tell, like, she seems kind of panicked and nervous on the witness stand. But then straight after that, when she starts talking about Kitty harassing her, her demeanor just completely changes and she becomes slightly calmer, but at the same time, you can see, like, the annoyance and anger in her.
Yeah. Also, I think that the image of the family was too important to Kitty that she would do something like poison the family while someone else was there. And I think that Jose knew that. Like, I don't think he would have suspected that she would try to poison the family when someone else was there. And also, she would be poisoning Tracy.
Yeah. I think one other clue as to, like, that story, not necessarily that the story wasn't true, but that Tracy wasn't there, is that in the second trial, during Eric's cross-examination, when David Conn is cross-examining him, David tries to, like, get testimony about the letter in. So when he's questioning Eric about that dinner, and, like, obviously Eric knows where David is going with it, and Eric basically replies and says, like, that whole dinner was, that whole situation was blown out of proportion.
That the dinner was blown out of proportion, or the letter?
Like, the whole situation to do with, like, Kitty threatening to poison the family, I think.
I mean, I don't know if that seems pretty significant to me, if she did threaten to poison them.
I think it's something that did happen, just not, like, as overt, and definitely not in the presence of other people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely in character for Kitty, so I'm not convinced that it never happened, but...
Yeah, it definitely lines up with, like, all of her previous behavior, like, known behavior, and her personality's type and structure. We already know what her personality is like, not only through the opinions of lay witnesses, but also through the opinions of her treating therapists. And it lines up perfectly with that.
I mean, you know, there are people that will say, like, that letter that Lyle wrote to Tracy is evidence of him being willing to fabricate evidence, and therefore all the other witnesses probably fabricated or exaggerated what they saw to suit the brothers. But I don't know. I don't think that letter is proof that none of the abuse happened.
Yeah, that's what... I mean, I've seen some people say that, like, oh, okay, well, Lyle tried to fabricate evidence, therefore that must mean his entire defense was a lie and they were never abused. Like, I don't make that link. Like, if you can show me, like, evidence of Lyle trying to fabricate abuse evidence, then maybe I would agree more with that argument, but there is no indication of that. And also, I think something to keep in mind with the whole fabricating evidence thing is Tracy's testimony is pretty unique and is very different from every other witness in that trial. Not only, like, the subject matter, but also the way in which she, like, speaks about it. When you think about, like, Kitty threatening to poison the family, if that's something that only happened in the presence of Eric and Lyle, that's an incredibly hard thing to prove. And I could sort of see it as like, oh, we don't have anyone else. There's no witnesses who actually saw this. Maybe we can, like, get an ex-girlfriend or, like, a friend of ours just to say that it happened. Which doesn't excuse it, of course, but I can sort of understand why Lyle may have felt pressured to, like, do that.
Yeah. Like, I think it makes sense that Lyle would think that it would be really important to have corroboration for something like that because, you know, obviously, if she had threatened to poison the family, then she was perfectly willing to have her children die. And, like, that's pretty significant.
I mean, their whole defense was based on a fear of both parents. And if there was no, like, direct evidence of, like, their fear of their mother, or, like, not as much, like, compared to, say, Jose, then you can sort of see why Lyle would be like, oh, like... how are we going to prove that our mum was a scary person?
Right. And also, because Tracy said that happened in, like, 1988, right? Was when she dated him?
I believe so.
So, like, very close to the time of the killings. So, it makes sense that he would want someone to provide proof that she was still a scary person, because a lot of the testimony about her abuse came from their early childhood.
Yeah. I think it's also key to note that, like, if Lyle was going around, like, asking basically all of his friends to lie for him, I think you'd see a lot more people, like, coming out of the woodwork, like, in the media, especially to say, hey, Lyle asked me to lie for him at the time of the trials, but I refused him. Because, obviously, I'm pretty sure most people would have been like, no, I'm not gonna lie for you. But I think that's very, like, a select few people that would have done that. So I feel like you'd see more people who would have come out and said, hey, this is what Lyle tried to get me to do and I refused.
Yeah. Even family members, like, people always say, oh, their family, of course they would lie for him or lie for them. But I'm just gonna say, like, if my cousin killed my aunt and uncle and they were, like, perfect, amazing humans and had done nothing wrong to their children ever, and then their killers came to me and said, Hey, can you say that this thing happened? I would say no.
Yeah.
Like, you killed my aunt and uncle. What are you... Why? What, you think I'm gonna, like, help you?
I will reiterate, though, that, like, if you want to, like, look at that example and then, therefore, believe that the entire abuse, like, narrative is just completely made up, that's completely fine as well. You're, well, in your right to believe that. But I think there's more than enough outside of this which still, like, proves the abuse. Like, and there's not enough of the alleged fabricating of evidence to counter that.
Yeah. And I also think that if a lot of the other witnesses had been coached by Lyle to fabricate their testimony, I think that they would have said that things happened a lot closer to the time of the killings than they did, or they would, like, testify about incidents that were more overtly threatening.
Yeah.
But they didn't. Actually, on that note, like, didn't Alan Anderson see Kitty and Eric, like, 2 weeks before the killings?
Oh, yeah, I believe so, because didn't...
Because he had, like, just had a baby.
Yeah, it was... They went to visit when they were, like, Eric was on his, like, tennis tournament tour, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, as they were, like, leaving or something, they, like, passed by Alan's house, I think.
So, like, Alan could have said that he saw abusive behavior by Kitty on that trip, but I don't think he did. I think he just said that she seemed normal, right?
No, she seemed like... It corroborates Alicia Hertz, actually. You know her testimony about Kitty being, like, dazed and confused, and she just didn't seem herself, and she's, like, something seemed odd about her. That's basically what Alan said as well. I'm pretty sure that when Kitty was at the house, like, she was just not there.
Mm.
Like, mentally.
When is the last time you saw Kitty?
10 days before her murder.
And can you describe the condition that she was, what did she look like?
Like a puppet on a string. She had no frame of mind. She was just, you try to talk with her and it would be like she was just seeing right through you. She was not paying attention to you. She was very, her eyes were bloodshot. She was very pale. She was not, she was dressed in a very unusual way that I was used to seeing her dressed.
What was unusual about the way she was dressed? Or was it just that it was different than...
Different from what I was normally used to seeing her. And,
When you spoke to her, did she respond? Did she answer questions? Or?
She... And my dad did most of the talking for her, which I found very strange.
That goes towards the brothers being, like, scared of her behavior, because she was so... acting so strangely in the last few weeks.
Yeah. I still think that it's not, like... strong enough evidence that she was about to murder them.
Yeah.
Like, he could have described behavior that would make her seem...
like, more threatening.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to part one of our two-part series. Check out part two, which is on Jose's abuse, for the rest of this episode.